Welcome to the Wondrous History Podcast and to a new episode from a mini-series that I've thought about doing for a long time, where I talk about what I think are some of the best history books that have influenced me throughout my life. As a note, this is an entirely personal opinion based on the history that I've studied way back at the university during my undergrad and postgrad, but also other history books that I've come across that I think are really good. As a result, these books will understandably revolve around the 15th, 16th, 17th centuries. Having said that, of course, there will be many exceptional books that you might have read, say about like the history of the Mongols, or a very specific history of Karelia, or the history of Yugoslavia, and the examples are almost countless. What I'm trying to say is that with history being such a broad and encompassing discipline, it's hard to even compile a list of the top 100 history books ever written. And with that in mind, I want to start with arguably my favorite history book, a book that has influenced me greatly, and a book from one of my favorite historians. And that is, I would say that this is more of an encyclopedia than a book, first of all. And that is the Mediterranean and the Mediterranean world during the age of Philip II, which comes in two volumes, written by Fernand Braudel, one of France's most important historians, and I would say one of the most important European historians. The edition that I possess is from 1995. It's translated into English by Shin Reynolds, and it was published by the University of California Press. This original work was published firstly in French in 1949, with a second revised edition in 1966. Fernand Braudel was also known for another set of quite impressive research projects. So the Mediterranean was the first one. Then there was his work on civilization and capitalism. And then he had The Identity of France, which was unfinished. And the thing about Braudel is his analysis of the large-scale economic and social factors that make history happen. And that's why he deals with such a broad and complex topic, which is A, the Mediterranean, B, the Mediterranean in the 16th century, and C, the Mediterranean during the reign of one of its most important and consequential figures, which was Philip II of Spain. Now, as someone who studied the decline of the Venetian Republic in the 16th century in the Mediterranean, this book proved very crucial to me. Philip II was arguably one of the most influential actors in the Mediterranean in that century, along with the Ottomans. During his time, significant shifts and events take place. We have Malta, we have the war in Cyprus between the Venetians and the Ottomans. Spheres of influences within the Mediterranean shifted back and forth, or better said, west and east. Philip II wanted to keep the Ottomans as far away as possible from Malta, Sicily, and broadly the Italian peninsula. And in a way, the Ottoman conquest of Cyprus redirected their attention from the west of the Mediterranean. And we know all about, I've spoken about in the previous series about Suleiman the Magnificent's naval campaigns in the western Mediterranean in the first half of the 16th century. And we have this redirection more eastwards in Venice's sphere of influence. Now, this book, and this is, again, to restate, this is about the second volume, is gargantuan in terms of length and its detailed approach. It's a very specific type of history, the one that Fernand Braudel and the French school in that era wrote. In the interest of keeping this video a bit shorter, I will focus on volume number 2, and I'll offer like a rundown of its structure and topics. So volume number 2 starts with chapter 4, relating to empires. And within here we've got like a couple of subdivisions. The origin of empires, and here he discusses about the Turkish ascendancy from Asia Minor to the Balkans, the Ottomans in Syria and Egypt, the Turkish empire seen from within, and then, as I've said before, it goes to the other side of the coin when it comes to the Mediterranean, and that is Spain. So Charles V, Philip II, and the transition between them is important to analyze over here. Then, within the second part of chapter 4, we have notions about the state, resources, and weakness. Chapter 5 is more of a societal analysis. It talks about the reaction of the nobility to the major war events happening there. Then there is an important element which often accompanies war, and that is poverty, banditry, unfinished revolutions, class struggles, the increase in banditry, the issue of slavery, which is quite important as well. And then chapter 6 looks at civilizations. We have, it's entitled Mobility and the Stability of Civilizations, and it looks at how cultural exports traveled, the cultural diffusion and resistance. Greek civilization, did it survive? And that's a very important topic when talking about the Ottoman Empire and Rumelia as a whole, the European part of the Ottoman Empire. Then we have the issue of overlapping civilizations. And as I've said before, the Turks in the Eastern Balkan Plains. We talk about, Brodel talks about Islam in Spain with the Moriscos, the Morisco Rebellion. He dedicates quite a bit to the drama of Granada and the aftermath. Subchapter 3 here, it's also, he discusses about the destiny of the Jews in the 16th century, and that is quite a significant topic. Another very important topic is the forms of war, and I feel like here I'd like to come back to this topic when discussing about the military revolution. Not just Geoffrey Parker, but there are a few other historians who have analyzed this very, very complex phenomenon in history, and I'll want to come back at a different date to analyze this a bit further. Piracy, interestingly, is also analyzed within this context, and as we all know, the corsairs in the Mediterranean proved very valuable assets to the Ottoman navy, not just in the 16th century, but also before and after. Now, part three is entitled Events, Politics, and People. What I like about this, it's a very chronological approach, and to be fair, it's one that has often inspired me, not just with like the podcast, and you can see that there is kind of a clear, especially when I talk about the Ottoman-Venetian War of Cyprus, that there are other, that I have also, throughout my previous essays, in my postgrad, I've liked this chronological, but also causal approach when analyzing the second half of the 16th century. So having said that, the first subchapter is 1550-1559, War and Peace in Europe. And here we have the origins of war, 1545-1550, Peace in the Mediterranean. Then Brodel presents the Africa affair, Mühlberg and after. Then war in the Mediterranean and outside of the Mediterranean. We have an analysis of the fall of Tripoli on the 14th of August, 1551. 1552, the flames of war. Corsica becomes French and England Spanish, that is according to Brodel. And the several abdications of Charles V, 1554, 1556. Then we go to the return of war. Initiative still comes from the north. The Treaty of Cateau-Cambrésis, which I've often discussed about, and it is a pivotal moment in 16th century European history, and Philip II's return to Spain. From here, he proceeds to go Spain in the mid-century, the Protestant scare, political discontent, financial difficulties. The many bankruptcies of Spain throughout the 16th century are one of the most analyzed financial and economic sorts of history. Then we have a very important subchapter entitled The Last 6 years of Turkish supremacy. So Brodel tends to think that 1565 in Malta is a rather pivotal moment because it shows weaknesses within the what was considered to be a Ottoman naval behemoth. We've spoken about this many times before. And war against the Turk is Spanish folly. And here Brodel analyzes the breakdown of Turco-Spanish negotiations, the naval supremacy of the Turks, and the Djerba expedition. Then we have Spain's recovery with the years 1561 to 1564. A double enemy, the Corsairs and the Winter Seas, 1561-1564. Corsican uprising and peace in Europe. Brodel goes on to present a few figures on the maritime recovery in Spain and Don Garcia de Toledo. Malta is an important subchapter here. Was it a surprise? The resistance of the knights, the relief of Malta, and the role of Spain and Philip II in this, which has always been a bit disputed because there were many factors which led to the outcome at Malta. Please do check back with the episode. I think it was the one about Ivar Dragut Reis or one of the earlier episodes in the podcast. Then we go to the formation of the Holy League, in which many events had to take place in order for the Holy League to be formed, 1566, 1570. So Brodel explains what happened with the election of Pope Pius V. The Turks in Hungary and the Adriatic war breaking out again in Hungary, the situation, the tense one in the Netherlands in 1566, and how actually between 1567 and 1568, the Mediterranean it was eclipsed by the Netherlands. And speaking of eclipsing, the War of Granada is more than that. It is a turning point, the rising of tide of war, the beginning of the War of Granada, and the consequences of this with what happens in Tunis. Then Brodel proceeds to correlate what happens in Granada and the war in Cyprus with its early stages, and then the relief effort. Lepanto, arguably one of the most important events in early modern history, one of the biggest naval battles as well. There is a whole chronological presentation by Brodel of what happened with Lepanto in 1571. 1572 is named as a dramatic year with the French crisis up to the St. Bartholomew's massacre on the 24th of August 1572, Don John of Austria's orders and counter orders in the summer of 1572, then Venice's betrayal and the two captures of Tunis between 1573 and 1574. Brodel presents Venice's case, the capture of Tunis by Don John of Austria, which was called another victory that led nowhere, the loss of Tunis in September 1574, and then towards the end we have peace at last in the Mediterranean, which goes into an important chapter called Turco-Spanish peace treaties between 1577 and 1584. We have Margliani's peace mission between 1578 and 1581, and we have the 1581 agreement. By that point we have another Ottoman Sultan, Selim II passes away, Murad III becomes Sultan, and we see somewhat of a pacification, or at least the stop of major naval warfare in the Mediterranean, because both Spain, the Ottomans, but also the Venetians, the finances were strained to say it the very least. And with this in mind, Brodel says that war leaves the center of the Mediterranean, and he looks at the Ottoman Empire in Persia, the war against Persia, the Ottomans in the Indian Ocean, the invasion of Portugal, which is a turning point of the century, at, and give me a second to pronounce this right, Alcazar Quivir, I hope that is correct, 1580, the coup, and then Spain leaves the Mediterranean. The final chapter is out of the limelight, the Mediterranean after 1580. It starts with problems and difficulties for the Turks. After 1589, rebellion in North Africa and in the Islam world, the Turkish financial crisis. 1593-1606, the resumption of major offensives on the Hungarian front, and then from the French Civil War to open war of Spain 1589-1598, the wars of religion in Mediterranean France, the Franco-Spanish War 1595-1598, the end of naval war, in which Gian Andrea Doria refuses to fight the Turkish fleet in between August and September of 1596, and the conclusion with the death of Philip II in September 1598. So just from reading, and that's not even entirely the whole table of contents, we get the scope and scale of this book. It's quite impressive. This book is very good if you're looking, if you want to research something around this time in European history, go to the sources section of this book, and you may be able to find some very helpful leads here, because there are sources from the Spanish, French, Italian, Vatican, Ragusa archives, the European archives outside the Mediterranean and France. The cartographical sources are phenomenal, some of the best. Whether you're looking for economic and financial charts, for maps, the bibliography in this book is nothing short of spectacular. Now, obviously, because this book was written when it was written, a lot more research has been done in the meantime. I don't think there's that many revisions of this book, as we will see with another book which I'll discuss quite soon, and that is The History of Philip II by Geoffrey Parker. To conclude, This book is an almost invaluable source of information for anyone interested in the history of the Mediterranean, specifically in the 16th century, but also provides a lot of context from before that. It is an historical encyclopedia, and once again, if you're interested in this time of history, it's very well written as well. It's not dry. The volumes of information may seem a bit overwhelming, but once again, if you're in high school, if you're at university, I will easily recommend this as one of the best history books you can get your hands on, because the range goes far beyond any one historical category. That's the thing about this book. It's not just military history, but it's also socioeconomic, the history of diplomacy. It's a history of characters as well. Yes, we do have Philip II in the main title, but also you get quite a bit on many Venetian doges, many popes, many French kings, Ottoman sultans, and Ottoman figures of state, such as grand viziers and all of that. All in all, easily one of my favorite books, and one that has forever marked me as historian, as a student, and in the postgrad, and everything that followed afterwards. So that is what I would like to be the first review of many other history books. I hope you enjoyed it. Leave a comment in the comments section if you've read this book, or if you want to read this book. What's your opinion about Brodel's work? Maybe I can come back with his other major blocks of historical work. But there are at least three or four other books that I like to speak about in the meantime. Some of you might be able to guess one or two of these. I'm looking forward to just continuing these. It's sort of a review section of the podcast, and I hope you find it informative and of use. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Wondrous History Podcast. Please like and subscribe. It helps the channel quite a bit. And until the next time, all the best.